Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. In a moment, I'll be joined by Allison Weir, a longtime activist for peace in the Middle East and an advocate for the rights and aspirations of the Palestinian people. Recently, her organization, If Americans Knew, was notified by YouTube that they were in violation, and then suddenly their YouTube channel was taken down and then reinstated. This led Allison to investigate the worldwide network of individuals who support the State of Israel and who actively work to replace facts, as they're seen by other people, with propaganda that embellishes the point of view of the State of Israel. It involves soldiers, students, the military, and even organs of the state itself. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you who support my work with subscriptions to the Peter B. Collins podcast. Great folks like Linda Gray, Steve Wozenski, Benny Alto, and Judy Holloway. I invite you to join them. I need your help to keep this work going. Visit peterbcollins.com. Find the menu tab, click on that, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber, and boom, you're at the sign-up page with a range of options, hopefully one that fits your budget. I'm glad you're listening, and I appreciate your support.
It's always the same. It's always in vain. The truth were only known. The words had only shown. But lies and deception, they move.
The State of Israel has a comprehensive and ongoing effort to try to police speech that it considers to be either hateful or against the political interests of the State of Israel and its current extreme Zionist government. Allison Weir is a fascinating woman who founded the organization If Americans Knew, and she is also the president of the Council for the National Interest. And she joins us today on the Peter B. Collins podcast at the request of many listeners who've mentioned Allison Weir's name to me over the last few years. Allison, thanks for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
And I just want to talk a little bit about the Council for the National Interest. You're the president, and my friend Phil Giraldi is a frequent contributor and also, I believe, a member of your board. James Abaresque, who is a very bright man and a guy who's been very honest about the brutal treatment of the Palestinians over the years, is part of the organization.
And it was That's right. And in fact, he was, as you recall, a senator, U.S. senator from South Dakota.
That's right.
And let me just put in, too, that Philip Giraldi is the executive director now of CNI.
Great. Well, I last interviewed him about a powerful piece that got him bounced from the American Conservative because he spoke the truth about Israel and the way its powerful influence is often sanitized or downplayed in the American media. And I just want to make one more mention of the Council of the National Interest because it was co-founded by two former members of Congress, Paul Finley and Pete McCloskey. And Pete is a longtime friend of mine. He's been a guest on this podcast on many occasions. And I should be honest that I worked for Pete on his campaign for Congress back in 2007 when he came out of retirement to challenge the conservative Republican Richard Pombo in an area near Modesto, California. And how have you connected with the Council for the National Interest, and what do you have to say about Pete McCloskey, Allison?
Well, Pete McCloskey is a truly, I feel, heroic individual. He was as your listeners probably know, but not everybody may know, he was a highly decorated Marine who served his country in many ways. He was a really highly respected congressman from California, and I knew about him long before I myself lived in California. He was a Republican who had very early opposed the Vietnam War. He was popular among both Democrats and Republicans, I think, because he was clearly a man of integrity and honesty. So I respected him, even though I didn't know much about him. I didn't know about him, you know, certainly didn't know him personally for many years. What happened to him is that he did become, he was a very honest and courageous individual, so he spoke out on many issues. One of them was on Israel's treatment, oppression, and violence against Palestinians. And for doing that, he was targeted by the Israel lobby, and they worked to destroy his career and, you know, basically make sure that very few people would hear about Pete McCloskey as they did about other people.
Well, in the early 1990s, I was hosting a daily radio show on KNBR here in San Francisco. Pete was a guest one day. We talked about his efforts to expose a really ugly alliance. It was collusion between the San Francisco Police Department and the Anti-Defamation League. And it's a very complicated case that related to South Africa and the alliance between the Israeli government and the apartheid regime going back many decades. And for that, I was identified by the ADL as some sort of a threat. They went to the radio station management, and for the remainder of my time at that station, anytime I covered the Israeli-Palestinian dispute, I had, for example, Congressman Tom Campbell, another moderate Republican in the vein of Pete McCloskey, who was also honest about the role of Israel in suppression of the Palestinians' aspirations. And that drew kind of another round of monitoring by the Anti-Defamation League. And I offer this history because you've written a powerful piece. I'm going to link to your blog at If Americans Knew on March 8th. And I picked it up because a Facebook fan of mine had posted it. And I shared this with my listeners. And this is what we're going to delve into today, Allison Weir, because let's start with the way the YouTube channel of If Americans Knew was suddenly on probation, then it was taken down by YouTube, and then after you complained, they reinstated it. But you aren't told by YouTube who provoked this and what the reasons were why they took down your YouTube channel.
That's right. That's what stimulated. Then I investigated a bit more what had gone on and why it had gone on, and discovered this whole very well-funded, orchestrated international network on behalf by the Israeli government and by pro-Israel organizations such as the Anti-Defamation League to police the internet, to specifically police social media, to flood it with pro-Israel propaganda, and to block factual information about Palestine and about Israel and about the Israel lobby that Israel wishes to be blocked and suppressed. And just quickly, before I forget to get to this, some listeners might wonder what the ADL has to do with all of this, the Anti-Defamation League, because many people might be the way I used to be. You know, the image is that this is a benign organization that works against bigotry.
Right.
Which I think most of us applaud, that it works against bigotry, specifically against Jewish individuals. Well, it turns out that half of its mission publicly, and I believe it's probably far more than half of its $50 million annual budget, is its mission specifically says that it stands up for Israel. It advocates for Israel. And criticism of Israel, facts about Israel that it doesn't like, it considers, quote, anti-Semitic. So when you read reports from the ADL, which some people think is a reliable organization, claiming that anti-Semitism has increased. They always seem to say it's increased. I never really hear them saying it has decreased. These are very questionable reports because, first of all, they're quite likely most often talking about statements and actions having to do with Palestinian human rights. Plus, they never supply any sort of spreadsheet to document this, so these supposed incidents of anti-Semitism.
And Allison, central to all that we're going to discuss today is this very conscious conflation of criticism of Zionism, criticism of the policies of the State of Israel, criticism of its leaders, including Benjamin Netanyahu, and these are very often simply described as anti-Semitic. And, I spent time in Chicago. I was there when the Skokie case was described. Determined. And I have a strong support for those who really fight hate and, virulent attacks on those who are Jewish. But we've seen a lot of Gentile politicians in this country who get money from AIPAC or from its allied interests. And they have carved out a very grave exception that I have deep opposition to in our First Amendment. And we've seen at the state level, and we've seen bills introduced at the federal level to basically define those of us who support boycott, divestment, or sanctions against the State of Israel for its policies as anti-Semitic haters. And that on that basis, government agencies can deny contracting to individuals or corporations who support BDS. And this is a very alarming development, and way too many of our elected leaders are just going right along with it.
That's exactly right. And again, the degree to which this is orchestrated has been truly eye-opening and astounding to me. I've been researching this. What I do is I try to find as many facts as I can. I'm not interested in inaccurate information, exaggeration, etc. I want to know what's going on, and then I want to share that with others. So it's really in some ways even worse than what you just described. I did another earlier article like this YouTube article. Both are very long, in-depth examinations. And my earlier article was that, as you know, as we've both experienced, as soon as you start supporting Palestinian human rights, as soon as you say that Israel needs to adhere to international law and it's not doing that, you're called anti-Semitic. This is, a tactic that's been used for many decades. What's increased in recent years is that there's this effort, very successful in many places, to actually change the meaning of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, if you look in your dictionary, means prejudice or bias against Jewish people. It's a very simple, very clear definition. It's an action that you and I clearly oppose, and I think pretty much everybody opposes. But now they're enlarging that definition, creating a definition where about half of it is describing certain types of statements about Israel that supposedly now those are that counts as anti-Semitism. So they've created, this has been intentionally done. It started with a minister in Israel, and Datan Sharansky has been replicated in other places. So they now have a definition that was at one point called the working definition of anti-Semitism, created by a European institution that was then picked up by an Israel partisan in the U.S. State Department, who then decided that this woman, Hannah Rosenthal, adopted that definition. It's now called the, quote, State Department definition. Now we have state legislatures starting to adopt that supposedly State Department definition of anti-Semitism. That then gets picked up by some colleges and universities who then adopt this definition created by Israel, in which criticisms of Israel become, quote, anti-Semitism. And if some campuses that have adopted this, wanted to invite me to speak to give a presentation about the factual material I've discovered, that would, by this definition, be considered, quote, anti-Semitism, And therefore, that student group, which normally has access to student fees to bring speakers, would be denied their legitimate access because of this really incorrect, exaggerated, fabricated new definition of anti-Semitism.
And Allison, it's reached extremes. Victims of Hurricane Harvey in Texas were required to sign a statement that they didn't support BDS in order to get relief supplies from our government, from FEMA. There is a teacher in Kansas who has challenged the state law there that required her to decline a contract with a school district because, based on her faith, she supports BDS. And we're seeing faith used as a way to, you know, maneuver around the Affordable Care Act, around contraception requirements or policies. And so this turns the, you know, religious freedom description on a totally different ear, but nonetheless, it is sideways. So, Allison, I want you to please explain to our listeners what Israel's new media desk is and what they do.
Sure, I'd be glad to. This is one of many organizations inside the Israeli government that are working to, quote, police, to thought police the internet, to promote pro-Israel propaganda and to delete and prevent factual information about Israel and the Palestinians and others from being from existing in the media. It was it's been described, much of the information I'll be giving actually comes from Israeli news sources, Haaretz, Ynet, a number of Israel covers this type of thing quite well. The U.S. media, not surprisingly, doesn't tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was there's this special desk, one of, as I said, many, that has these Twitter commandos that will specifically employ Israeli soldiers to tweet, to adopt false identities on the internet, to troll, to push the Israeli narrative throughout the internet. And this is being, these are Israeli soldiers sitting in Israel at computers that are then flooding the internet with certain types of pro-Israel material and commenting and calling other material false, anti-Semitic, etc.
Now, is the new media desk the entity that gets the $25 million a year in annual funding from the Knesset to combat BDS, or is that a different group?
I believe that's a different group. There are so many, it's a little hard to keep track of, but there was another entity. It's sort of called, I think it was called the commando unit,
mm-hmm.
that is getting millions of shekels, millions of what would be also millions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
to basically be a 24/7 operation to monitor what's going on in the U.S., to create content, to flag content they don't like, to flag videos that they don't want on YouTube, and to cause YouTube to take those videos down. In our case, fortunately, our videos were only taken down for about 5 days. Others have been taken down far longer. Our entire channel was taken down for a period of time, even though now YouTube has acknowledged. Interestingly, somebody at YouTube apparently what seems to have happened with our YouTube channel is that it was being flagged, massively flagged, no doubt by the media, these units from Israel, and probably by just volunteer Israel partisans.
You can call them trolls.
Trolls, apologists, Zionists. I don't use the word Zionist since many people don't know what that actually means. It's an ideology supporting Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it got flagged. But then YouTube's policy, they say, is that then they have an internal examination of your videos, and those, whoever did that, decided to gave a one strike against the video that had elicited these flags. It was a video about a Palestinian who had been killed by Israeli forces. Some group at YouTube, I suspect Israel partisans, decided that violated their standards, which it did not. But so they gave us one strike. Supposedly, that doesn't really do anything. That takes down that one video, but does nothing to your channel. Within a few days, before we had even had a chance to appeal that, we hadn't even been aware of it, they took down our entire channel, violating their own policies where you're supposed to get three strikes and be informed of what specifically you had violated. But we were never informed about what we had specifically violated, and suddenly our entire channel was down.
And your accusers are not identified to you, right?
The accusers are not identified.
Mm-hmm.
This made very clear to me, I'm not as naive as I might have once been, so it wasn't completely unexpected, but it was shocking, to tell the truth. And it made very, very clear the power of these social media companies that we now, many people take for granted, they use as their way to communicate with one another, Facebook, which is very unwise because these are private companies, many of their owners appear to be quite pro-Israel. So, you know, we know that they have the power to censor things if they choose to. And this showed us, this was their power. They could take it down without any explanation whatsoever, without any warning in the case of just suddenly deleting our entire channel. Fortunately, we appealed. We got no response. I sent emails. We used the online form. I searched for a way to actually talk to a human being and could not discover a way to do that.
No.
You know, I'm old-fashioned enough to think you can actually talk to somebody, maybe pick up the phone and try to find out what's going on.
I once tried to call management at Twitter, and the only published phone number is for human resources, and it's voicemail.
That's right. Yeah.
So these tech companies, they have phones, and they can call you, but you can't call them.
That's right. So, and these are, you know, as I said, they're private companies, but at a certain point, a line becomes crossed into being semi-public. These are now in some ways what you would call the public square. So being taken down by YouTube is very significant for groups. There are other video hosting companies that we are also using now that are very important. Everyone should use those, should go to those. But right now, YouTube, as I recall, has about 10 times the reach of its nearest competitor.
You're right.
So it has enormous power. And so when something gets taken down from YouTube, that means that the information that you're trying to share with the general public is no longer available to millions of people who otherwise might well see it.
But Next introduce us to the National Union of Israeli Students and the trolling program that they began as far back as 2011, Allison.
That's right. This is another one of these Israeli governmental, Israeli organizations that specifically works on this. This is still going on. It's organized by the National Union of Israeli Students, where they would pay students, I believe it was $2,000 for 5 hours a week to be trolls on the internet.
Now, let me clarify, is that $2,000 a month or is that $2,000 a week?
Let me look back. Let me see if I can remember what that was.
The article reads, under this program, Israeli students are paid $2,000 to work 5 hours per week to lead the battle against hostile websites. Now, that's a pretty nice pay rate, 5 hours for $2,000.
That's right. And I'm not sure if that was, I don't recall now, but if people go to my article, I always give the embedded links so that you can find out more. Mm-hmm. My article is very long, but the information it draws on is even longer. So you can go to the specific embedded link on that, which is an Israeli news report. In fact, usually more than one that will give you even more information, the specifics, and sometimes those lead to further embedded links.
All right.
About, you know, to get the, you know, more and more details about each one of these initiatives.
So these students are being paid, and they're on four different teams: content, Wikipedia, monitoring, and new media. And let me just briefly read from your article. The content team, responsible for creating original content in a news format, that's similar to what we are told the troll farm in St. Petersburg was doing. The monitoring team is responsible for monitoring efforts while reporting and removing anti-Semitic content from social networks in a variety of languages. The new media team responsible for social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube channels, and so on. And then the fourth is the Wikipedia team, responsible for writing new entries and translating them into languages that operate in the program. And this one is where I'd like to start, because a listener, Robert Blumen, who heard me talk about your article originally about 10 days ago, Allison, sent me a link to the Electronic Intifada story about the startup of Camera, this monitoring and rewrite Wikipedia program, and this goes back to 2008. So what you're describing here are efforts that are not recent. These are ongoing and comprehensive efforts to manage information. And we talk about information management. It's not just spin or, you know, trying to get, you know, the most positive bounce out of a particular item. This is censorship. This is the replacement of what people consider to be facts with the worldview of Hasbara. Explain Hasbara, please.
Hasbara is a Hebrew word that means, quote, explanation. It basically means state propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, Israel is a master at Hasbara, as they call it. I have no idea the correct way to pronounce it, but their state propaganda is being pushed widely. They have entire departments always with the latest wording and clever way to push this largely misinformation. So there was this, you know, Camera, which is very active. It's one of just dozens and dozens and dozens of well-funded pro-Israel organizations.
And you
on
say
our website,
that,
we have a list of them.
And Allison, you write that in 2010, two Israeli groups began offering a course in Zionist editing of Wikipedia entries. The aim was to, quote, make sure that information in the online encyclopedia reflects the worldview of Zionist groups. So this is clearly information control. And by controlling the information, they hope to ultimately control dialogue, debate, and policy.
That's right. And anybody who's read Wikipedia on the Palestinian issue, probably others, but certainly, you know, in terms of Israel-Palestine, will see entries at times will contain information that is just false. It's just completely, you know, demonstrably false, and yet it remains there. You know, some editors apparently try to clean it up and try to have accurate. And, you know, somebody there at Wikipedia or somebody who's an editor of Wikipedia, now we learn, obviously, at some places they're probably Israeli students. Other times they're probably Israeli soldiers. At times they're people that have worked, that are working with Camera, this American pro-Israel group, are actively infiltrating Wikipedia. And the thing to point out is that, you know, obviously this type of thing goes on quite a bit, but what's different here is that this was an effort that was leaked. The actual emails were leaked to the Electronic Intifada, and we actually received some of those leaked emails ourselves back in 2008, that what Camera was doing was organizing people to collude in ways to go on to become Wikipedia editors, which gives you far more power to edit entries in Wikipedia than just the average person, to work together to hide the fact that they were what they were doing, but to work together to take down information they didn't like and to put up often misinformation that Israel wanted people to believe.
Mm-hmm. You also describe a program that is also an app. It's called ACT.IL. Act Ill? Is that how we would refer to it?
That seems to be, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you learned about that from the Jerusalem Post. Quote, it's a campaign that taps into the collective knowledge of IDC students who together speak 35 languages, hail from 86 countries, and have connections to the pro-Israel community all over the world. So this is, again, a very comprehensive and detailed effort. And you say the project is led by former Israeli intelligence officers, has close ties to the American casino mogul Sheldon Adelson. Another funder is Paul Singer, funded via his foundation. He is well known and often described as a vulture capitalist. He holds a lot of the paper, the debt of the island of Puerto Rico. And so this is a fascinating look at how technologically sophisticated and organizationally advanced these efforts are.
That's right. Exactly. This is, you know, quite an interesting initiative. It's fairly new. And they, again, in the Israeli media and sometimes in the Jewish media, for example, the Jewish Forward and Jewish Telegraphic Agency have had articles describing this, you know, this propaganda effort. One article by, well, the Jerusalem Post article specifically says that offers, quote, world Jewry an opportunity to fight for one thing the majority can rally behind, Israel. You know, of course, that's an exaggeration. There are many Jewish Americans who oppose Israeli actions, but this is how the Jerusalem Post frames this.
Well, you also describe a virtual network of allies, including American Jews who go to their local Jewish community center. And we've got a great JCC right near me here. They've got a fabulous swimming pool and workout room, and it is truly a community center. And you describe how they are assigned missions from headquarters in Israel to take on certain tasks, and all of these relate to the central mission of controlling information about Israel that is published around the world.
That's right. This is, you know, quite disturbing to read about what's going on. And they talk about specifically, an organizer says, when you work together, you can be incredibly powerful in the social media landscape. So these are missions that are being directed by the Israeli military in Israel. They're sending out missions that people in some community, Jewish community centers, specifically we know now, the in New Jersey there's one coming up in Manhattan, the Jewish Philanthropies of Boston host a media room to do this, where users will carry out missions assigned to them by Israel. They are specifically looking for both senior citizens and teenagers. One of these Israeli articles wrote that the Israeli military, in fact, the Israeli military stated this, that they are scouring Jewish communities for internet geniuses, for prodigies that they can use on behalf of Israeli propaganda. And what makes this disturbing, again, if somebody's listening to this podcast, and I hope some people will be, you know, you need to know what this means, because this is not only massive manipulation of an important means of information worldwide, an important means of for people to learn factual information and share factual information. It's not just to manipulate that and to control information, which I think anyone would find disturbing. But this is to disguise and to cover up violent, violent atrocities being committed against human beings on a huge scale. The occupation of the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, the periodic invasions of Gaza where Israeli forces kill massive numbers of children. Massive numbers of children are left disabled, permanently disabled. Israel has invaded Lebanon, where I was not too long ago, where there, you know, huge numbers of people are killed, civilians are killed, children are killed, the infrastructure is destroyed. This has been going on for decade upon decade upon decade. This is what's being covered up. The fact that this is continuing right today as we speak, that's what's being covered up.
Allison, you also described the role of the State of Israel's Strategic Affairs Ministry. They have a $70 million annual budget. I guess that $25 billion figure I had is a couple of years old. And you write that Its activities include a 24/7 operations room monitoring all of the delegitimization activities against Israel, protests, conferences, publications calling for an anti-Israel boycott, international bodies boycott initiatives. The operations room will transfer the information to the relevant people to provide a proper response to these activities, whether through a counter-protest or through moves to thwart the initiative behind the scenes. Now, as I hear this description, and we link that to these volunteers at Jewish community centers across the country, this really pushes the envelope for me on the Foreign Agent Registrations Act. Now, many people have made the case for years that the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, should have to register as a foreign lobby interest under FARA. But this is directly controlled by the Israeli government managing American citizens in the United States to manage the reputation and the information dissemination for a foreign power. And I find this very absolutely troubling, Allison.
That's right, absolutely. Here we have the media, you know, across the board talking about this alleged Russiagate. And we have this clearly documented case of a foreign government using American citizens, sadly, to manipulate Americans. You know, Israel even some of this program, this 24/7 operations room that you just were describing, you know, all these activities that they are having Americans do, including, by the way, introducing legislation. This is being directed by this 24/7 Israeli operations room. You know, this is going on openly, being written about publicly. In publications well regarded, respected mainstream publications in Israel, are exposing this, describing it, very proud of it. Most of the descriptions are laudatory because this, you know, for Israelis, this is, you know, from most Israelis, they think this is wonderful because, you know, it gives them great deal of power over the United States. It's even written about openly and sometimes in a very laudatory way among publications in the United States. So this is being documented, it's written about, it's there available for people to learn. And yet, when do you ever hear NPR talking about it, or Fox News, or CBS, or the New York Times, or the San Francisco Chronicle?
Oh, we don't. You also go on to define the role of Unit 8200, and that is roughly the Israeli equivalent of our NSA, that's the high-tech spy agency. And you say that they have created a covert internet activity branch. The unit is composed of thousands of cyber warriors, primarily 18 to 21 years of age. A number of its graduates, you point out, have gone on to operate American tech companies here in the U.S. And, you know, when you get these, you know, government arms, the intelligence agencies involved, once again, we have a serious conflict of the sovereignty of the United States.
And that's right.
And because it's Israel, that is treated benignly. And Allison, I won't draw you into the whole Russiagate scandal, but I appreciate that you described it as alleged. I'm still very skeptical about it. And the one area of collusion that we know about was that Israel pounded the appointees of the incoming Trump administration, including General Mike Flynn, to try to persuade the Obama administration not to go neutral. We just voted present for the first time on a UN Security Council resolution that condemned Israel. And they went into overdrive to try to get the Trump team to block Obama from doing that. That was the international collusion that has been exposed so far. But once again, because it's Israel, it draws no attention.
That's right. You know, we see a pattern here, don't we?
And the other alarming element toward the end of your article here is that there have been meetings between high-ranking Israeli government officials and the management of Facebook and Google and YouTube. And you cite Fortune magazine from 2016. Quote, Facebook, Google, and YouTube are complying with up to 95% of Israeli requests to delete content that the government says incites Palestinian violence. And that would be your YouTube channel, right?
I think exactly. You know, Israel considers anything critical of it as anti-Semitism, any factual information about Israeli violation of human rights as, quote, incitement, any information about what it's like for Palestinians living under occupation would be considered incitement. So they've made a real effort to meet with the heads of Facebook, Google, and YouTube. Again, this is, you know, very public. You know, what we know, what's on the public record is extremely strong. So it makes you wonder, most likely this is not all that there is that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, this is probably just the tip of a very large iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
But just the tip is enough that it certainly should raise huge alarms among Americans, should be discussed by Congress, should be in the media, should be the executive branch should be addressing this. Once again, if this were any other country, that would be happening. There would be congressional hearings. There would be politicians working to make their career by, you know, hitching their wagon to this. But because of the power of Israel, because of the Israeli lobby in the United States, whose name you're not even supposed to say, because of the power of Israel within the Palestine Solidarity Movement, this is all being used to prevent information of great concern to Americans from being even known, much less discussed.
Mm-hmm. And Allison, as we wrap up here, I'd like to get your thoughts on the first year of the Trump administration. The accelerated plan to basically jump over years of process and announce that we're moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem has had a pronounced negative effect. Of course, that too is sanitized from U.S. media because of the pro-Israel stance. And because even though world leaders and all of those affected have denounced this move, it plays to the consensus view that Israel is the only democracy, it's America's only ally in this troubled region that we keep starting wars in. What is your take on the status of relations between Israel and Palestine and the prospects for any long-term peace agreement?
Well, my view is as long as Israel has the power over the U.S. that it currently has, the prospects for peace are extremely remote. You know, Israeli leaders, now there are many Israeli citizens who don't like this, but Israeli leaders and the majority of Israelis, clearly from their voting record, think and are accurately believe they pretty much hold all the cards, that there is no need to compromise with Palestinians to, you know, come anywhere close to any kind of just solution or just compromise. They have all the power, and, you know, they'll just maybe offer a few crumbs now and then to Palestinians. The so-called generous offer from a number of years ago was nowhere near a generous offer. No American would have ever accepted it,
mm-hmm.
And yet the media portrayed it inaccurately, as though the Palestinians had turned down a real offer, which was not at all true. I feel the only way that any of this will change, the only way that there will be finally some sort of peace and justice in the region, is for the American public to learn what's going on. Because it's our tax dollars, $10 million per day going to Israel, year after year after year. We do far more on behalf of Israel at great harm to our own country. So when Americans learn about this, then it will change. But until we learn about that, until the American citizens learn about it, our politicians will keep giving Israel everything they want, and that will give Israel the feeling that they don't have to compromise, that they don't have to give anything to the Palestinians, that they don't have to obey international law. They don't have to even obey American laws, and they'll still get our tax money. And I think that's one reason why it's so important to Israel to control the information that reaches Americans, to control YouTube, to control Twitter, to control Wikipedia. They don't control it yet, but they certainly have a great deal of influence and are trying to have more, because they don't want Americans to learn the real facts. that would be a game changer.
And Allison, I'm only speculating here. I want to be clear about that. But as I look at the picture where Trump named his son-in-law, the Crown Prince Jared Kushner, as a point person between Israel and Palestine, and he's done almost nothing except confer with Israelis. And then he named his bankruptcy lawyer as the ambassador to Israel. And both of these men are very deeply involved on one side of the struggle, supporting the illegal settlements in the West Bank. And to, you know, borrow a bankruptcy term, it appears to me they're trying to cram down a deal on the Palestinians, where they bring in the Saudis and create some new alliance between the Saudis and Israel, with Iran as the opponent that glues them together. And then they basically just issue a series of ultimata to the Palestinians and say, take it or leave it. And with the U.S. backing a Saudi-Israeli coalition, I think it could be a very deadly approach to this long-running stalemate.
I think the key word there is deadly. Certainly this, you know, announcement and the move to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel has been disastrous. It's causing great loss of life. Many people have been killed. Many more people have been injured. This will continue. Until now, both parties have made the statement that, oh, you know, when they give their speech to AIPAC, that they will move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, that they'll recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Obama did that. Bush did that. Both parties do that. But when they are in office, they didn't do it because they knew it would be a disastrous move to do. So this is where the Trump administration is departing from what previous Republicans and Democrats both did. Both were bad in many ways. Both just pandered to the Israel lobby and to Israel. Israel called the shots. The United States did not call the shots. Occasionally we'd get our way, but not very often. Now we've got the Trump administration taking steps that are far worse than previous administrations have done. It's extremely, extremely dangerous for Palestinians, for Israelis, because there's loss of life on both sides. And it's very bad for Americans who don't even, in most cases, know that it's going on.
Allison Weir, thank you for your activism. You've been at this for 17 years now. I want to refer people to your blog at If Americans Knew. I'll put up a link to it in the show file for this podcast, along with your article. And I just want you to keep up your activism. I really respect what you're doing.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your program where you try to get this and other information that people should know out to the general public. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this in-depth interview with Allison Weir. Send your comments to Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.